Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Blue White Breakdown. The premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown. Brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and David Jones.
And we're on with the Blue White Breakdown. It's going to be a little less blue white in this breakdown simply because... And it's not going to be about football at all because we have, well, no, it will be about football. In fact, Jerry Palm, our special guest, I have known for what, half our lives now?
Yeah, about 30 years almost.
Yeah.
Long time.
I don't know if you, let's just start. Everyone pretty much knows you at this point. Bracketologist for CBS. And, enter into football rankings also, and you got your start by, you're really a story of the early internet. You're one of the very, I was thinking about this, you're one of the very, very first internet stars, kind of a internet happening in the early 90s, as far as the internet goes. I think I got my first power book in 1995. And I was noodling around on there and found you. But let's even go farther back. You had started a couple of websites, only one at that point, collegerpi.com, which it computed the rating percentage index, that formula at the time that the NCAA used as kind of a baseline for picking the NCAA tournament qualifiers. And before that, they had not released the formula, which was kind of silly. They made it seem like it was this complicated formula, and you just reversed engineered it. It wasn't hard. And you were a computer specialist at a bank in Chicago in the early 90s.
Right. I may have still been at the law firm when I first started trying to piece this together, which was 93. The first year I actually started publishing things and trying to do a bracket was 94. So, but I figured the RPI bit out in 93. This is how far back this is. This is primitive internet days.
Driving down a street with no one on it at first.
Yeah, that right. So I had this new computer and this new database program. And the internet, Al Gore just invented the internet. So I'm trying to figure all of this stuff out because my job at that time is I'm a computer programmer, actually a manager for a bank or a lawyer, a law firm, big time law firm now.
In Chicago.
In Chicago. So I'm teaching myself this new technology. And at the same time, I see an article, I think DeCourcy wrote actually, about the RPI formula changing. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I could self-teach. I could create a database to calculate this RPI.
I didn't know this part. Mike DeCourcy wrote the story that you read?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, this is the Sporting News. So okay. It was probably him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I created my database, but then I had to get all the scores. Well, we didn't have team websites back then. I had to go to the library and get the old newspapers. Now, this is February, right? It's like the beginning of February. So I'm going back to November and getting all these scores and making copies of it at the library so that I could bring it back home and enter them into my database and create this database. So
that's
this is a labor intensive thing back then.
February of 93.
Yeah. Well, that's what
I'm imagining a yellow legal pad with like pencil and erasers. Right? Is that about it?
I don't think I had a legal pad, but yeah, there was a lot of manual labor in this. I got it all cobbled together and I started publishing it on news groups, you know, the caveman writing on the wall version.
News groups, yes.
Of message boards now.
Give us some names of the news groups. Do you remember them?
No, I don't. They were college basketball news groups. So whatever generic college basketball news group there was back then.
What do you think the audience was for this thing at first? Hundreds?
People who had access to the internet. And
how many?
And interest. Dozens? Oh, my gosh.
Hundreds?
No. I'm not sure that's plural. If you had the internet and you had an interest in college basketball and you were willing to try and find a place to talk about it, that's I thought I'd publish these numbers and the number of people that would be interested would fit comfortably in my minivan. You know, it turned out to be more than that.
That was the internet in 1990.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of how it got started. And then people started asking me to email them to them, which I wasn't going to do. But then the next year, this is one of the big moments. AOL, remember them? I was at an AOL account at the time. I had an AOL account at the time.
You've got mail.
They gave us a web page. We got one page, one web page that we could post stuff on. So I posted the RPI there. So I could just send out a link and people could find it. So I was publishing. Well, I'd really say it's, you know, like since 94. And that's the first year I did a bracket that I published a bracket. I did one in 93, but I didn't know what I was doing. And you could argue that I still don't know what I'm doing. But
how could you perceive whether the audience was growing and how much was it growing in those first
by the years? Comments
years?
By the interactions. All
volume of comments.
Yeah. It just grew. I didn't have a way back then to count visitors. Yeah,
right.
Or page hits or anything like that. I mean, they gave us a page and didn't give us a way to monitor traffic. You know, that was still primitive technology. So,
and then in 1996,
yep,
this guy
I created collegeRPI.com in 96.
And then this guy from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, yep. What did I do? Did I email you or
call? Yes, you what? Did. Yeah, you emailed me. You were the first media person to contact me. I had heard from a lot of followers of the numbers, and I wasn't even sure like the NCAA would shut me down at some point, you know, like you can't
well they that. Yeah, oh. They were very proprietary about RPI. They didn't want anyone reverse engineering
that. However, this guy Jim Suckup in Indianapolis was doing it, so I figured they'd have to shut us both down if they were gonna.
Well, I've got to interject here.
Okay,
the first time I saw Suckup's I thought it was Suckup. Is it Suckup?
I don't know. I always said Suckup because I enjoy that pronunciation better. But, you know, if I were him, I would not pronounce it that way.
And he's an Indianapolis guy and sort of this strange little hermit kind of guy who was I called him on the phone. And he was kind of antisocial and didn't want to answer questions. And he thought maybe he'd get in trouble with the NCAA if he answered any questions. And I remember seeing his RPI ranks at the Atlantic 10 tournament in the early 90s. We're talking about 90, 91. And it was this hush-hush thing. I remember Ray Chella and Joe Lenardi at the A-10 tournament handing these things out. And they looked like they'd been copied like 70 times, like a 70th generation copy of Jim Suckup's RPI, and it was like, don't tell anyone where you got this, because the NCAA wanted to crack down on this thing. They considered their formula proprietary, even though it was really simple. So okay, take it from there.
So so I got interactions from people, and the formula, the basic formula itself was public knowledge, the actual details like you know, leaving out games that played against your opponents and stuff like that was, you just sort of figured that out, or I figured it out. But,
well, you're a computer geek. You could do it.
Yeah, right, and math.
All right, so fast forward to Mike Holt.
So 1996, I created collegerpi.com, and I always say that this is the miracle of my story because it took Penn State being good at basketball, which happens. I mean, they've been a little better of late, but at that time, it's like a once-a-generation thing, right? That Penn State is good.
They had been to the tournament in 5 years prior, but it didn't happen very often. Before that, it was 26 years since they
did. Yeah. So Penn State happens to be good at basketball that year.
This is Jerry Dunn's team that he took over from Bruce Parkle, who really built it, with Pete Lisicki, Danny Earle, Matt Gaudio, Glenn Secunda, and Calvin Booth, who is now the general manager of the Denver Nuggets. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so you get in touch with me, you send me an email, and you're asking me questions about what this is, how it's used, a lot of really basic type questions, and I'm trying to answer them. And then at some point, we stopped trading emails, and you called me, and we talked on the phone. That was probably our first hour-long conversation.
I had a lot of questions for a guy from Harrisburg, right?
But that's why you're good at your job, because you're thorough. So not all of our hour-long conversations are that thorough. Sometimes we're just talking, but you know,
well, this thing was completely foreign to me, and I couldn't get my head around the fact that your opponents were worth at least as much as 50% in the games.
50% back then. So the quality of your opponents mattered a lot. Strength of schedule was important, and this is one of the ways that they measured that. So at this point, though, I'm still kind of figuring it out myself. I've only been doing it for a couple of years, so I've done two brackets, you know, and I'm learning, obviously, as I go, what's important. But I told you what I knew, and you would keep calling me, but you tell two friends, they tell two friends, shampoo commercial breaks out, which if you're as old as we are, you'll get. And then pretty soon, everybody who covers college basketball, like over 2 years or maybe three, knows who I am. And they're calling me, and I'm on the phone, I'm on radio, I'm doing all these brackets and stuff. And it's just because I answer the phone and I answer questions.
But you were easy to talk to. You were social. You wanted to explain the thing, which was the difference between you and Sukup and also Jeff Sagarin. He's a couple of hermits who were kind of antisocial, didn't like talking, didn't want to be on the phone with everyone. And this is a lesson to kids now. I mean, if you can share your expertise, you can monetize it. You can. Yeah. And within how many years was College RPI and then College FBS?
Yeah, no, BCS, College BCS.
BCS.
Yeah, right. So that started in 98 when the BCS started. So then I went from doing, you know, one sport to two sports. And they were similar in the way that rankings were created, but different. They had a strength of schedule component, which was problematic. But
College BCS was this albatross, which that Roy Kramer, the creator of the whole BCS era, had put together, slapped together. God knows where he got these seven computer experts. They were from all over the country. There were seven, right? And that entered into this giant formula.
I think it may have been. It may have been six to start out with. I don't know. It could have been seven to start out.
Yeah, I think it ended up seven. So there were and that was only one of the components. Then there were polls.
That was a third of it. Yeah.
There were human polls. There was this giant, all this data. And you had to reverse engineer that. What did you do? Call up all these computer geeks from around?
No, I could not. Only one of them had a formula that was publicly available. And so I wrote a program to duplicate it because I wanted it faster than he. Published it, and he posted, you know, he didn't give you code, he gave you the math, and I wrote the code, you know,
because well, I'm what math about the other
ones? So I could do that.
All I remember,
so everybody else, I just guessed.
These guys were like faceless, and you only knew their names. I remember this one guy named Wes Colley.
Yes,
every time we said his name, we went, because no one knew what they looked like.
I had spoken or, you know, emailed with them, but I couldn't tell you, I don't think, what any of them look like now. So they had six, actually, well, it ended up being six computer rankings. And I had the formula for one and estimated the others, you know, so I would estimate the movement from week to week as I was trying to predict what was going on. And it didn't take very long to, especially as the season gets later, to make good estimates. Once I had an idea how these formulas
you were very accurate.
As accurate as you could be without knowing formulas. Yeah. I thought I did a reasonable job of estimating what these rankings were going to look like before we saw them.
We had been loosely cordial, but I don't think I had called you as much as I did in 1999. Actually, you emailed or called me in 1999, and you had discovered something that was huge news, as it turned out.
Yeah, for me it was, as it turns out. But that since I had the strength of schedule formula for the BCS, I was able to duplicate it. And then all of a sudden, late 1999, my numbers don't match anymore. And I'm going over and I'm trying to figure out what data point did I miss? No, I've got everybody's records right. What's going on? And then I figured out that they had changed the way they were handling the FCS playoff games. They had the year before and up till that point of the season, they had been counting them and then suddenly decided not to. In the middle of the season, the week of Thanksgiving.
Not only the middle of the season, but the end of the season, whatever, critical.
Right. They changed. What seems like a minor tweak to the formula, except for one of the teams in contention had played an FCS playoff team. And because you're changing strength of schedule, which is a big part of the formula, it could have had an impact on who finished second that season. Now, in the end, it didn't. And also just the concept of changing in the middle of the season and then
not telling anybody.
Yeah, not even getting approval for it. Just, you know, someone in, you know, Roy Kramer's office or Big Roy himself, surely, you know, makes the final call. Yeah, we're going to change this.
The genesis of it was that they did not anticipate that 1AA playoff games between James Madison, who had made the 1AA playoffs, would be a problem. And all of a sudden they're playing all these teams with 12-1 records.
Yeah.
And that could conceivably enter into Virginia Tech's grade, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was Virginia Tech was a playoff team that year. They could
be helped, and Nebraska fans were pissed off because they were right on the cusp of making the FBS championship.
If Virginia Tech had lost, it would have been a really competitive situation.
And so for 36 hours, this was a huge story. You were on SportsCenter. I wrote something to
publish, and then I sent it to you, and I said, hey, what do you think of this? And you said, why don't you let me publish it? Because I've still got – you haven't built up your credentials yet, and if I do it, it'll get a lot more legs, which turned out to be absolutely true. So
I quoted the heck out of it.
Yeah. I next thing you know, I'm on my way to in-laws for Thanksgiving, and I get a call from someone at ESPN. They want me on SportsCenter. I'm kind of between home and Indianapolis. All right, we'll get you a studio in Indy. So my first time on television. Like, usually when I'm on TV, I wear a suit or at least a shirt and tie, something like that. But that was my first time on TV, and I'm in a polo that I dug out of my suitcase.
And you looked like what you are, a computer nerd.
I probably still look like that.
And you've never really changed that image. And I think that image helps you. Yeah, I've always
I don't know that I'm image conscious. I just am what I am. Yeah.
Well, it's like a weather guy on TV who looks a little bit nerdy, and that helps his cred, actually.
I am nerdy, so that's okay.
So you're on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
I end up getting a call from Mike Greenberg.
Yep.
I don't even know. Golick is the other Mike.
Mike Greenberg.
I'm on their radio show. And then they want me on ESPN News. So I go down to Lemoyne and in this intersection.
One of the four Lemoynes in Pennsylvania, if I remember that correctly.
It was a strange experience because that's where the Channel 15 pup truck, the satellite truck happened to be. And so I went over there. It was like a mile and a half from the office, the Patriot News office. And I'm standing out there in like 37 degrees. The wind is, I got long hair. I'm completely unkempt. I'm getting the wind blowing in my hair, but I'm on and everything works. And Whit Watson, who is then one of their anchors, is talking to me. And I'm doing this with an earpiece. And then a giant fire engine comes around the corner. It doesn't have its siren on, but it's going around the corner. And everything I say for about 4 seconds is like in the wind. And I had to wait. The whole thing was ridiculous. But we were stars. We were like the number two story on, yeah. I guess that was Wednesday before Thanksgiving,
yeah.
for about 36 hours. And what it came down to is, had Nebraska beaten up Colorado in their annual game by what was anticipated, like 6 touchdowns, then they would have had a real claim on that spot that I guess Virginia Tech got, and Tennessee was in the mix, something. But but Nebraska didn't play well, and so that made it moot. But if Nebraska played really well in that game, it would have continued to be a huge storm.
Yeah,
it would have been a crazy story for Roy Kramer and his deputy, who's Charles, what was his name?
Bloom. Charles Bloom.
Charles Bloom.
Yeah.
And they had to admit to me, I got a hold of Bloom, and he said, yeah, we did change the formula. And they never would have admitted it if you hadn't uncovered it.
Well, right. I mean, what could he do? Well, he couldn't deny it. I'm sitting there with the numbers. You can deny it, but math is math. You know, you've got a witness or something that you're trying to.
I think these days they would have taken the Steve Bannon tack and just denied it, just lied, you know. But it was 1999. Anyway, it worked out that Florida State played Virginia Tech for the national title, and neither Tennessee nor Nebraska was involved, and so it didn't matter.
It could have.
And at that point, in the aftermath, you're on Jim Rome. Wasn't that true?
Yeah, I was on with Rome at some point. Yeah.
So what kind of questions did he ask you?
Oh, nothing unexpected. He wasn't, he's got kind of a reputation for being blustery.
Yeah, but what did he say? He said, what kind of formula is this, Jerry?
Yeah, basically. He was asking about the formula, but what specifically did they change, and what kind of impact would it have? And do you think this is fair? He, of course, had an opinion on that, which was the same opinion that we all had. No, you don't change stuff in the middle of this, you know. There was nothing controversial about talking to Jim Rome. I mean, sometimes it can be that way, but I was on his show. I've been on his show a few times, but not at all recently, and never had any issues with talking.
Well, that all germinated from Penn State basketball of all
things. Yeah.
So
that's why I say it's like the miracle of my story. Everything that good that has happened to me since then all started with Penn State being good in basketball. So if that had never happened, who knows if this would have ever taken off. Maybe you would have found some other way. I don't know.
We're taping this on Thursday or Wednesday early afternoon, and we have just watched this debacle. Now, I know what I was thinking when Virginia was losing by 25 to Colorado State and scoring 42 points. But what were you thinking?
How'd they ever get to 42? I always say you cannot judge the committee by what the teams do when they get to the tournament. You got to judge them based on the information they had at the time. They didn't know that Virginia was going to completely stink it up, although there was certainly a reasonable possibility of that. They're offensively challenged. Virginia didn't belong in the tournament. And that was based on what we knew about them at the time. There were, three or four other teams that would have been that were more deserving based on what they did in the regular season.
And who were those in your opinion? St. John's?
Oklahoma, St. John's. Yeah. I would have put Seton Hall ahead of them. I don't think I could have gone with Pitt necessarily, although you could make a case for Pitt. They were similar but different. But that's already
four. I thought Pitt because they had a lot of road wins.
But
their schedule, their non-con schedule.
Yeah, their schedule was really bad, and that's what did them in.
This is what people don't understand about the NCAA process. They are going to kill you for a crappy non-con schedule, a really crappy non-con schedule, where you don't try to play other teams, or if you don't beat anyone outside of your league. And for instance, everyone's darlings, Indiana State, where you're very close to, what was that, Terre Haute? I can't remember.
Yep, Terre Haute's about 2.5 hours down the road.
They played two legit teams, got beat by 22 and 12, Michigan State, and who was the other one? I forget.
Alabama.
And outside of that, they didn't play anyone in their non-con. Well, if you're a mid-major, you're going to have to go on the road and play more than two teams, because if you don't beat either one of them, you need more chances, because you're not going to play anyone in the Missouri Valley that's going to lift your resume up enough. And you can't just...
They were fortunate to have Drake even, which would, made it a good year for the league, because Drake was a good team.
People see you win 28 games, but they really wanted to see Robbie Avila, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or Larry Nerd, depending. And so did I, because they're entertaining. They play entertaining basketball.
And they're a good team.
Watch this Virginia team that is just so dreary.
I didn't even say Indiana State, did I? But I should have said Indiana State, because I thought they were better than Virginia as well.
All right. Well, this is what I was thinking when I'm watching that 67-42 debacle. Neither one of these damn teams belong in it, and neither do the other ones that we just mentioned. I don't think Seton Hall might be uglier in a way than Virginia. All they do is throw the basketball up on the rim and go get offensive rebounds. They can't shoot. They're sloppy. I don't think any of these teams really belong in the NCAA tournament. And this is what I'm really getting at. What I was thinking is, can you believe they want to expand this thing?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know me, Dave. I'm in favor firmly of going back to 64, And the thing that's annoying about expansion, other than just totally lowering the standard of the teams that are in, and we just saw the standard of a team that's in, is that they're not expanding for Indiana State.
No,
they're expanding for Indiana.
Right.
They're expanding for Seton Hall. They're expanding for mediocre.
They're not even expanding for Seton Hall, buddy. They're expanding for Minnesota
and
Georgia and crappy teams from the Big Ten and the SEC. That's all they want.
Yeah. It's just annoying, really. And nobody cares except people who bet on games. And, they watch everything and they care about everything. But the casual fan is not going to pay attention to this tournament until it gets to 64. I don't care how big they make it. No one's filling out a bracket until it gets to 64. No one's getting in a pool until it gets to 64. So, how many people are you really engaging with these extra games?
The other thing is, I think it's most likely they're going to go to 76 and add 8 more schools. And we're going to have a giant first four, which becomes
it's going to be 12 games. If it's 76, to eliminate 12 and get to 64. So that's 24 extra teams.
It's a first 12. Yeah. It's a first 12 involving 24 teams at the bottom of the bracket.
Yeah.
So all made of 76 all together. And you're going to have nothing but these crap games down there on Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, in God knows how many venues. It's not going to be containable in Dayton. You're going to have another venue, probably Indiana.
Oh, sure. Yeah, maybe two more. Here's the other thing they're going to do with that, Dave. Those extra games, they're all going to be one-bid leagues. They're not putting any major conference teams in those games. They're putting them all straight in the bracket, and they're going to make these one-bid leagues cannibalize each other so that you have fewer of them in the final 64.
You're not going to have any of the Davids playing the Goliaths in the early rounds unless they make it through this gauntlet in these first games that involve 24 teams. Right. That's going to include all the little league and medium-sized league schools. Right. And they are going to cannibalize each other, wear each other out. And whoever makes it out of there, then they're going to play the big schools. People won't realize.
They're going to have to play them as a 14 seed.
Yeah, the 12 and 13 are going to be why major. We're not having as much fun in the tournament. They'll yeah. just, they won't know why, but it won't be nearly as much fun.
No, they will absolutely 100% ruin this event.
You won't have any 15-2 games. You won't have any great 14-3 games, let alone a Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue or UMBC beating Virginia. That's
Fairleigh all Dickinson gone. Won't make the 64.
That's all gone.
Yep.
And people don't understand that. That's what they really, really don't understand. Before we go, you want to give we should go through the Big Ten teams real quick.
Okay, sure. Your show, Dave. I'm following you.
What do you think Northwestern and Florida Atlantic? Florida Atlantic has not played particularly well lately.
They had a weird year. Florida Atlantic there was one point in the season they had losses in each quadrant, and then the quad three loss dropped down to a four, so now they got two of those. The transition to the American was kind of hit and miss for them. You could have left them out of the tournament and made a reasonable case for that. But are they an eight or a nine?
They're a nine.
That's an 8-9 game.
Or no, they're an eight. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an 8-9 game. I like Northwestern, even shorthanded. Northwestern's not going to be in this tournament long because they don't have Ty Berry. They didn't get a chance to get a seed that would.
Yeah, but their big man is hurt now too.
Yeah, but I still think they can beat FAU. You got Boo Booey, you got a shot.
That's right. I kind of agree with you because it should be a red flag when Florida Atlantic loses to Temple. You don't know how bad that is, but they did.
Yeah, well, they lost to Bryant before that and Florida Gulf Coast before that. So Temple's maybe a top three bad loss for them, but they're not Bryant number one.
Is he a friend of Howard? Illinois against Morehead State. I don't see any problem there for the
Illinois. No, I like Illinois to make a run. I think they can get to eight. I don't think I'm not picking anybody to beat UConn, but I think Illinois can get to eight.
And I think they can.
I wouldn't be surprised
too,
if they gave UConn a fight because of their athleticism.
And normally, their brainlessness, which always crops up one point or another, will get them. But they look rip roaring good athletically. And Terrence Shannon, holy crap! Whatever you think of him, his rape charge or his character issues, if they exist, and we don't know, but he got a stay of his suspension, and he's played like a man. He's been the best player in the league the last month. Yeah.
And Marcus Damask has been a huge – he's the one who kind of prevents the stupid. You know, he's the smartest guy on the floor, right? So that's why the ball's in his hands so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's the smartest guy on the floor. So
he's Jalen Pickett of Illinois, and the irony is – that Brad Underwood was decrying Penn State's booty ball last year.
But and that's now, totally Damask.
And now Marcus Damask is doing
But the thing that's surprising to me is that Damask and Lance Jones were on the same team at Southern Illinois last year. That team couldn't win
and
the
never made the NCAA tournament. And the coach just
How can you
fired.
Not win with those guys?
The coach just got fired, didn't he? I think he did.
Yeah, I think
Southern Illinois, SIU, yeah. Well, so they'd have maybe BYU and then Iowa State. I think Iowa State gets them, frankly.
Yeah, Iowa State definitely could. They're a great team. They should have been. I thought they should have been the fourth number
should
one. But
one.
Even if they're not, they're no worse than sixth overall. And they ended up putting them eighth overall because of their non-conference strength of schedule, which is stupid because their total schedule ranking is in the top 20. So obviously their non-conference strength of schedule didn't hurt them that much.
Yeah. Well, you can talk to Jay Billis about that because he agrees with you. Then we got I think Illinois is the Big Ten's hope to make the Final Four. That's my opinion, and we'll get to your alma mater later. Michigan State, Mississippi State, what a horrible game. This is a precursor of what the kind of crap that we're going to see once Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti get through wrecking the tournament. This is the typical game that we're going to see. Early in early rounds, an 8-9 with no life, no point, just a rock fight. I don't even care what happens. I don't know. Right. What's your prediction there?
They may not either.
Well, and whoever wins is going to get North Carolina, and that's that. Then we got the fun team in the league.
Yep.
Nebraska Cornhuskers. I love watching this team. They're the antithesis of Michigan State, an ensemble cast. No one really, I don't think you could say any one guy is that much more important than other guys. They got about 6-7 guys who can go off and have 15-17 point games in any one game. They right. get, and this is a very interesting, I talked to Micah Shrewsbury yesterday.
Yeah.
Because they've got A&M. They've got Texas right. A&M, which Penn State got last year.
Oh, right.
And I think Nebraska is quite similar this year to Penn State last year. Shoot a lot of threes, share the ball. Interesting.
They don't have the booty ball player like Penn State.
They do not. They don't have the guy to spray it around, but Tominaga is kind of a force of nature by himself.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Rick Mast can draw big men out if he hits a three or two from the top of the key. He can draw those big monsters that A&M has in the middle, who are like the greatest offensive rebounding. That was not going to help them on A&M's offensive end. So right. what do you think of that game? It's an 8-9 also in Memphis.
Yeah. I like Nebraska. A&M played well down the stretch of the season. They you look at their tournament resume, and they're just so inconsistent. They were just as capable of beating good teams as they were to losing the bad ones. And they had like four, or maybe it ended up being five, quad three losses, which is why I'm kind of surprised they're as high up the bracket as they are. But they had a lot of good wins. I mean, they could beat really good teams, and they could lose to really crappy teams.
It's a lot like they were last year, man. It's just inconsistent. Yeah.
So,
and Wade Taylor, their point guard, is the problem. He can be very erratic, and he's not a particularly good shooter. They're not good shooters. They just kind of throw the ball up and go get it like the old Fab Five. I mean, they're not a good shooting team.
Except for that, they're not the Fab Five.
I'm hoping for Nebraska, but this is the thing. Shrewsbury says to me, I said, you know, this is really reminiscent of last year's matchup with Penn State. And he said, I think so too. I called Fred. He texted Fred and said, and they talked. And I was like, I kind of suspected you might have done this. And he told me this story about when they saw this matchup last year. They said he thought this is a perfect matchup for them. If we can rebound, we'll destroy them. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And they did. I mean, they were up by 26 in the second half, win by 17. I don't see that happening for Nebraska. I think
unless they're shooting like crazy, which they can shoot the team out of existence. But
yes. Like Andrew Funk did. I mean, Tominaga can get on one of these insane roles. Who knows? next game. It's no secret I root for some Big Ten teams and root against others. And I don't think I'm strange that way among Big Ten basketball fans. Wisconsin, James Madison. Wisconsin just is so annoying to me. Their style of play, they're the Virginia of the Big Ten, and it goes back in lineage because Dick Bennett kind of started this thing 30 years ago, and that's Tony Bennett's father, and Tony uses a lot of those same tenets, and Wisconsin hasn't really changed that much through Bo and now Greg Gard. They just play that systematic brand of ball, but AJ Storr has become a star, like, finally.
Yeah, he's a difference maker. He's definitely the difference between this Wisconsin team and almost all of the others.
All of the others. Yeah. But so if Chucky Hepburn isn't thumping for and Tyler Wall noodling around with the ball for 15, 20 seconds of every possession, you know, Wisconsin should win the game. But I'm really hoping for JMU. That's a team that's won a lot of games. They've won 13 in a row.
Yeah,
which I think is the longest.
30, right? They've won 30 total.
131. And
yeah.
I'm hoping for JMU this.
I pick Jimmy. I figure if you can win at Michigan State, you can probably handle Wisconsin. You know, that they've got experience beating. I would actually say the Michigan State game is a better win than Wisconsin would be because of the game being at the Breslin Center.
Yeah.
And the expectations surrounding that game. You know, what everybody thought of Michigan State, James Madison didn't bat an eye. They just went after him.
And that was when Michigan State was ranked in the top 10 in the early season rankings, too.
Yep. And so I think James Madison is not going to be fazed at all about having to play Wisconsin. Their only problem is going to be Storr. You know, if he has a big game, then I don't know that James Madison can do much about it. But if he's just okay, then I think the Dukes have a shot.
Finally, your alma mater, Purdue. This has been a legacy of pain for you the last 3 years. First North.
Three. I'm an older Purdue fan than that.
Well, specifically North Texas and then St. Peter's and then last year, Fairleigh Dickinson. Three much lower seeds upsetting them. Was North Texas, they were a double-digit seed.
It was a 4-13 game.
Yeah.
During the pandemic.
But I can't see them. Like, I've seen both Montana State and Grambling. I don't see any problem for them in that game, no matter who wins. But TCU, have you seen Jamie Dixon's TCU Hornets?
Yeah, I've watched them a few times.
I think they're pretty athletic, and this is the kind of team that sometimes has given Purdue trouble. What do you think of that?
I actually picked Utah State. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
but it's an 8-9 game. Pretty equal chance of getting either one. Athletic guards can be a problem for our perimeter defense. I don't trust TCU to execute well enough to beat Purdue, even with their athleticism.
Fair enough. So after that, a depleted Kansas team that doesn't look like a legit four.
By the way, did you notice they're replaying the Maui Invitational in this bracket? Purdue, no. Tennessee, Gonzaga, Kansas, all in the Maui Invitational. Beat two of them in that tournament.
I have to cover football. I don't pay attention to the Maui Classic, the Maui Invitational. And didn't they play that in Honolulu this year?
Because they did. They played it in Honolulu. Yeah. Purdue beat Gonzaga and Tennessee.
So on the way to the title. After that, it's either Creighton or Tennessee. I don't see anyone in that bracket that Purdue can't handle. I think Tennessee's a little overblown. Creighton maybe, but.
Yeah, I think Creighton's interesting. If they shoot well, I was going to call Kalkbrenner he's not as big as Zach, but who is? So Zach could probably still be able to manage him offensively, but Kalkbrenner can step out and play away from the basket. If he brings Zach out more toward the perimeter, it could open driving lanes for other
guys. He doesn't like much. Anyway. Lance Jones, a very important guy, I think, like AJ Storm is for Wisconsin. I think he is for Purdue. Anyway, we're out of time. Jerry, we've gone over. This is the Blue-White Breakdown. Buddy, you're an old friend, and I thank you for being on.
Well, thanks for having me on. We should have done this sooner.
Why didn't we?
This has been the Blue-White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.